Hello, friends and neighbors, and welcome to Recovery Radio. This is Radio Johnny from the Latah Recovery Center. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can also find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook and Twitter. Recovery Radio's mission is to share with our community how recovery from addiction and mental health issues affects us all, to make our community aware of the recovery resources available in our area, and to share the personal stories of people in recovery, highlighting their experience, strength, and hope for continuing recovery. And I have a few announcements before we get to our interview today. And first, coming soon, our annual fundraising breakfast for the LRC and dessert. We have two smaller events planned for this year, breakfast at 7 a.m. and dessert at 7 p.m. on March 3rd. These events will be hosted at the Best Western University Inn and follow all recommended social distancing and masking recommendations. We're also live streaming the morning event and recording it on YouTube for those like me that prefer to sleep in. Jeff Conroy of Conroy Leadership Consulting is the keynote speaker. Table captains have the option of hosting a live table, a remote table at the time of the event, or putting together a virtual table with their friends at a time of their choosing to stream the event. The long lockdown and other stresses caused by COVID have proven the importance of our services, and we really hope you can help. Contact latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com to sign up as a table captain or to find out more. And I'm super excited to announce that the LRC has started our Winter Artist in Residence program featuring local artist Siri Stensberg. As a part of her residence, Siri will be offering a series of workshops open to the entire Moscow community and was supposed to start this last Tuesday, but had to be rescheduled due to the inclement weather we had. It's been rescheduled for next Tuesday, February 23rd at 5:30 p.m. This first workshop will be on working with watercolors. The workshops are absolutely free and all materials are supplied, so mark your calendars for next Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. and we'll see you there. Today's show is an interview with Amanda Fursted from the University of Idaho Vandal Health Education Department. And finally, don't forget you can access this and past Recovery Radio shows from the LRC website and as podcasts on iTunes and Google Play. And now here's this week's Recovery Radio interview. Hello, Moscow and surrounding areas. This is Radio Johnny on KRFP 90.3, the coolest station in the nation. That's my opinion. I'm sticking to it. I'm in the studio today with Amanda Fursted, and she is the mental health coordinator at Vandal Health Education, which is a part of
Recreation and Wellbeing at the University of Idaho.
Perfect. Thank you, Amanda, and welcome. Really happy to have you here today. You guys got some really exciting offerings that are going out, primarily to student and staff, but we'll go into some of the things that are that you do in your outreach for the local area. And why don't we start out, tell me a little bit about yourself, where you came from, how you wound up in Moscow, Idaho, which is a question a lot of people have. How did I wind up in Moscow, Idaho? And then a little bit about your education background, how you wound up as the mental health coordinator.
Yeah, I am originally from Chicago, Illinois. I'm from a bunch of different places in the Midwest throughout my time in the educational system. So I did my undergraduate studies at St. Mary's University of Minnesota in Winona, Minnesota, and I studied biology and Spanish with a chemistry minor there. And the original plan was med school, and I quickly found out that I wanted to do more educational efforts, and so I ended up getting my Master's of Public Health and Master's of Arts in Latin American Studies at Indiana University. So I've been all over the Midwest, and while I was there, I had the opportunity to work with the Latino Cultural Center for my practicum as part of my MPH program, and I got to work with college students, and I really loved that part of my internship experience, so much so that when I completed that degree, I was looking for jobs that worked with college students, and I found this opportunity here in Moscow, and so that's how I ended up here and in mental health, and it's been a really great opportunity, and I love working with our students and our staff and talking about mental health, and it's been more important than ever this year. So it's been a really great opportunity.
Yeah, no kidding. COVID-19 and mental health seem to be synonymous, equally bad news all the way around. We've seen an incredible uptick in services required for the Rural Crisis Center Network, which we are not the recovery center's part of it, but we service that side of the building, and it's been crazy with that. It certainly sounds like you have the qualifications for this type of operation, and my family's from Midwest Minnesota in particular.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, sure, you betcha. It's great to have you out here closer to the warmer weather. I looked at the weather this morning, and it was like -6 in Minneapolis morning. So when I looked at our temperature at 16, I went, wow, downright balmy.
Absolutely.
So glad we're all here. I think the first thing I want to, I would love to hear you talk about today is the QPR training that you do. And for people who are not familiar with that acronym, it stands for Question, Persuade, and Refer, and it's a suicide prevention training. I'm just going to let you run with that and tell us all about it.
Yeah, QPR is, like you said, it's a suicide gatekeeper prevention training. And so what that means is that we are teaching folks how to recognize warning signs and how to have a conversation with someone when they notice something maybe changing with their friends or their family, people they care about in their lives, and then how to refer them to help. So really, if folks can kind of, you know, walk through these steps of question, persuade, and refer, that's going to be kind of the structure for the conversation that you might be having with someone. So we cover typical warning signs that you may see. We talk about some myths and facts related to suicide to kind of dispel some myths and work on reducing stigma surrounding thoughts of suicide. And then we walk through that QPR process. And so we offer this for faculty, staff, and students at the University of Idaho, and you actually can sign up as a community member for these. We're doing them all virtually now, which is a shift from before, which is also opens up the doors to really, you know, reach our other satellite institutional sites for the University of Idaho, as well as some of our community members.
Oh, fabulous. Could we maybe dive in a little bit to each one of those points, the question, persuade, and refer? What does that look like?
Yeah, so really when we're talking about question, we're talking about, you know, asking folks if they are having thoughts of suicide. And so we go over some strategies of how to really have a direct approach with those. So we help you to figure out how would you actually ask this question in a setting where you're concerned about someone. So we talk about that. And then for persuade, really we're talking about, you know, really looking at what's going on for that person, hearing what, you know, might be a situational thing that's going on for them. It might be something related to a mental health concern, various things in there, and really how to have the conversation surrounding, you know, what's going on and reflective listening and some of those options as well. And really kind of sharing hope, help, and strength in that moment.
Right.
And then refer is, you know, really having the foundation to know what are options for folks who may be struggling with thoughts of suicide and how can we refer them to get to help. So we're not taking on the role of counselors or mental health professionals. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is recognizing that there's a potential warning sign, having a conversation if someone is having thoughts of suicide, directing them to those resources.
Right. Just for an example, I have a friend who is normally, you know, medium happy-go-lucky, you know, things are going well for him, but during COVID, he lost his job, his really good paying job, and now he's working in a retail scenario, making about half of what he was making. And, you know, he's fallen behind on bills, so he's got a lot of money pressure on him right now. And I noticed that he seems kind of dark, you know. He doesn't seem to want to go out and hang out with the guys as much, as much as you can in this. But, you know, he does not communicating as much. Would that be the sort of atypical type of thing that should, you know, cause me to have some concern about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned a couple of different warning signs there. So some situational things that would be going on in someone's life, like changes in job or financial situations, as well as noticing a difference in behavior. So not doing the things that somebody likes to do with the folks they like to do them with, as well as just kind of noticing overall demeanor. Those are all potential warning signs. And so that would be where we would talk through those various warning signs and then encourage the conversation to start, checking in with that friend, and then, you know, listening for those potential warning signs you mentioned, and then asking the question if they're thinking about suicide.
Right. Now, in the referral part of it, because I almost see referral and persuade being kind of really tightly related, at least in my mind. What does referral look like? And let's use my scenario. Let's say I persuade him that where he's at is probably not healthy, and that maybe there's some proactive steps he can take. And he says, yeah, maybe that's a good idea. And what type of referrals do we talk about?
Yeah, so there is a wide variety of different resources that you can refer someone to. And really, it's about having a conversation about what referral option is best and bearing in mind safety as well. So if there is immediate risk of danger, then we need to make sure that we get an emergency service involved. So that could be something like the Rural Crisis Network that you mentioned. That could be, you know, EMS, bearing in mind that for some folks, that might not be their preferred option. So really making sure that the person that we're concerned about, that we're involving them in their healthcare decisions. So for some folks, maybe that's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline or the State Prevention Lifeline. There's also things like Steve Fund or the Trevor Project for members of the LGBTQA community, or Black Indigenous People of Color for the STEEF Fund. And so there's a variety of resources. So it's really about kind of having that foundation of knowing what those different resource options are, which we go through in the training, and then having that conversation with the person that you're concerned about and saying, okay, here are some different options. Which of these options sounds like that might be a good fit for you? And, you know, that can be really empowering for folks to kind of take those steps and choose their own options for referral.
Right. And I know with men, we just about have to be, you know, bleeding out from an open wound before we're willing, yeah, maybe I should go to the doctor. I'm getting dizzy. I feel cold. So I imagine for men, it might be a little bit more of a chore than typically for women, who tend to relate their emotional side a little more freely.
There's a lot of different factors that go into why somebody may or may not seek help when they're struggling. We do know that help seeking is lower in male-identified folks than in female-identified folks. And there's probably a number of contributing factors to that. But we also do know that there are a couple of different risk groups when we're thinking about thoughts of suicide. So younger folks are at higher risk, and then older folks, and specifically older white males, have a higher risk rate there as well. And, you know, there's a lot of different reasons for that. And we know that there are some differences within gender identity, in that more women attempt suicide, but more men die by suicide. So, and that has to do with several different factors.
Methodology, is a big one on that. I had a short stint of some pretty serious depression after I left my last job, which actually, you know, I thought it was a great relief because it was a real pressure cooker environment. A lot of, you know, untenable deadlines and just, you know, go, go, go all the time. And
Unfortunately, I'm one of those A types who has a tendency not to leave work at work. Mm-hmm. Had a real hard time separating those things. And I sought some counseling while I was in that scenario. Mm-hmm. And once I got out of it, there was a certain relief of just being out of it. Mm-hmm. I managed to get off a blood pressure medication, a medication for depression that I was on, an mm-hmm. antidepressant. And about a year after that, I started experiencing those similar symptoms again. And I'm like, what's mm-hmm. going on? And I had enough self-awareness at that time from the counseling and, mm-hmm. and talking to my MD and using the antidepressants to recognize that something wasn't right. Something was going wrong. Couldn't figure out what it was. And got back in contact with the counselor, and he says, this is really common mm-hmm. for men when they leave an organization, a job, a career, mm-hmm. and move into retirement, because you're basically cutting out, and he said, in your case, two-thirds of your life, mm-hmm. two-thirds of your waking hours were consumed with work. Mm-hmm. And now you're out of that altogether, and you haven't replaced it with something. Mm-hmm. And so, depression can be caused by that. And fortunately, just having that knowledge and putting some action to it, mm-hmm. by doing more volunteer work here at the Recovery Center mm-hmm. and getting started doing this recovery radio program, which it doesn't consume 8 hours a day, but there's enough to it, enough responsibility that I could build it into at least what my brain thought was important work mm-hmm. and was able to get through that and get past those feelings. Mm-hmm. So I can certainly understand it. I also have a lot of friends who either are currently or retired from law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And the suicide rate for law enforcement, military retirees mm-hmm. is ridiculous, because their whole sense of self is so wound up in that career that mm-hmm. they have a real tough time sitting back in the rocking chair, mm-hmm. or sitting and fishing, because most of them were adrenaline junkies to begin with. Nothing like turning on the red lights and hitting that gas pedal. And when that's gone, it can put them in a really deep funk. And I worry about them a lot.
No, thank you for sharing your story, because when we talk about these things, then that helps us to reduce stigma and sharing mm-hmm. When we have, reached out and sought counseling or different things. And you mentioned several different options there that we talk about. So chatting with a counselor mm-hmm. and really getting those tools, because it's more than just having a friend to share with. Those mm-hmm. positive friends in our lives are so important, mm-hmm. but it's more than that when you speak with a counselor, right?
Right.
And then your primary care provider, that's a great place to start. And that's sometimes more comfortable for folks to start with a provider that they already know and have a relationship with,
right.
and they can start there. So sometimes that's a really great place to start, or just to coordinate care as well. Mm-hmm. And then medication, that's an option for folks as well. And sometimes that might change, like you said, that you started on one option and then you went to different things. And that's also totally normal and part of the process of finding what works for different individuals. So there's no one specific way of seeking help for folks. It's really figuring out what works best for you and noticing those factors, and career change for anybody can be one of those things that can be really difficult to grapple with. And a lot of folks are going through career changes and right. industry changes
right.
and our whole day-to-day lives have changed within the last year, pretty much everybody.
So, down the line. And moving on now, mm-hmm. I want to have you talk a little bit about mental health first aid training. And I know it's a certification program to help faculty, staff, and students understand and respond to signs of mental illnesses and substance use disorders, which is a big part of, it's almost a definition of what recovery is about and what we do here at the Latah Recovery Center. So I'll let you launch into that.
Yes. So this is a program that was developed in Australia and has come to the U.S. and all over the world. So there's millions of folks who have been trained in mental health first aid. And both of these programs, mental health first aid and QPR, have been studied and have been shown to be very effective for reaching out and getting folks connected to help. And that's the overall goal of both of these programs. Mental health first aid is about an 8-hour training. So it's a little bit longer than QPR, which comes in at about an hour. And QPR is much more specific to suicide prevention, whereas mental health first aid really looks at what is mental health, what are mental illnesses, and what do they look like, and looking for warning signs. So early, worsening, and then crisis warning signs. Mm-hmm. And they have an action plan that's called ALGI, and that helps first aiders to walk through, okay, I'm recognizing that somebody may be experiencing a mental health concern. What can I do to help? So very much like physical first aid, mental health first aid is offering help until qualified help can arrive.
Okay. There was just something on the news last night about how alcohol-related liver disease is on a huge rise. Mm. And now, alcohol abuse on campus, or use and abuse on campus, has always been a thing. I mean, sadly, we lose typically at least a couple of students a year to, you know, something alcohol related, you know, binge drinking or just alcoholism in general that can develop over time with, you know, constant use and abuse of alcohol. There's a big difference between going down to Mingles and blowing off some steam on a Saturday after a long week of work. But, you know, there are the students that have to have a bump in the morning just to, you know, go to class. What kind of symptoms or outward signs do you teach people to look for in cases involving, I'm just, for now, drugs and alcohol, but of course, mental health is next.
Yeah, so really a couple of things there. So I don't have specific numbers on rates of student deaths there, but we do know that pretty consistently about 20% of our student population choose not to drink. And actually that did increase with our most recent survey, that it's up to about 25% of students in our 2020 data. So we do know that there are quite a few students who do choose not to use. And really we come from a harm reduction model. So helping folks, if they do choose to use alcohol or substances, to do that as safely as possible. So that's where we come from on that. And so mental health first aid is part of that, of recognizing when there are potential warning signs that somebody may be experiencing a substance use disorder.
What do those warning signs look like?
Yeah, so some of them might be, you know, that folks might be having trouble making their commitments. Maybe they're planning events around places where that substance may be available. A lot of the warning signs are similar for mental health concerns as well. So not doing things that they enjoy doing with folks they enjoy doing them with. There might be, you know, issues at work or meeting deadlines or even their academics if they're a student, and kind of those things. So really, you know, we don't necessarily go through in mental health first aid specific warning signs for specific things.
Right.
The role of a first aider is not to diagnose.
Right.
But really, you know, looking for those changes, those fundamental changes are things that are going to help you to recognize, okay, I think, you know, it might be time for a conversation with my friend or my family member.
Right. And that's, I think, kind of what I was pushing at, not so much to be able to clinically diagnose somebody, but the types of warning signs. I mean, everyone misses a class now and then, but if somebody is consistently missing classes or, because people can be very, I'm a recovered alcoholic as well. I've been sober for about 26 years now.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And you know, it can be really insidious. At the height of my alcoholism, I was a daily drinker, 24/7. I mean, I would only drink in between passing out. But other than that, there was a bottle in my hand. I was amazed after I got sober that there were people I, you know, worked with, saw on a daily basis, that actually had no idea how much I was drinking. And I was a quart to quart and a half a day hard liquor drinker. So it's not always obvious, but there were people around me that saw that maybe this was more than, you know, just, wow, when he drinks, he really does like to drink hard. And there was one fellow who said, I've never seen anybody drink as much as you do and not pass out. Mm. And so there are clues mm-hmm. like that that people can see.
Yeah, and things like maybe, like you mentioned, an increased quantity or increased frequency, mm-hmm. or consuming that substance alone mm-hmm. Or without other folks. That could also be a potential warning sign. And some right. of those might be a little bit more difficult. And it also depends on your relationship with right. the person. So our students are going to see probably some different warning signs mm-hmm. within each other than faculty and staff are going to see for our students.
Right.
But there are different places where we can pick up those warning signs and those different warning signs depending on our relationship to them.
Right. And I would imagine it's difficult for people in position of authority, a professor, a student aide, to notice that somebody is like really slacking off, or you know their grades are really taking a tumble, or they're missing a lot of classes as well. It must be incredibly difficult for them to try and figure out, how do I address this? I mean, I saw this in my brother when mm-hmm. he was attending school, and I know what he did. Mm-hmm. So how did, it must be really difficult for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the whole reason we offer the training right. is to provide faculty, staff, and students with the tools to have those conversations. And really, a lot of mental health first aid and QPR as a gatekeeper is having conversations. Mm-hmm. And so, we have models for how to do that, talking about listening non-judgmentally, we're assessing for risk of suicide or harm, listening non-judgmentally, encouraging appropriate professional help, giving reassurance and information, mm-hmm. and encouraging self-help and other support strategies. So we kind of have ways of practicing in the session of, okay, this is how we would walk through our action plan, and these are tangible things that we would do mm-hmm. in these scenarios. And so we really work on talking about those things so faculty, staff, and students feel more prepared to have those conversations.
I don't know if you keep track of type those kinds of interactions that happen on and around campus, do you? Or is that something that's really kind of difficult to quantify?
Yeah, it's really difficult to quantify. So part of it is you do these trainings and you know that these conversations are happening, but we kind of hear about maybe some success stories or things like that of right. folks who have felt more confident having that conversation. But we don't really have that quantifiable measure of our folks having this conversation. But I can tell you that we've seen an increase in interest around this area since we've gone virtually. So this is the first time we've been able to offer mental health first aid virtually. So this is provided through the National Council on Behavioral Health. And they, in the fall, opted to allow us to do a virtual training and gave us updates and things like that. And since then, we have not had a class that was not full and folks were interested in doing those. So we're seeing that increase in that interest among our faculty, staff, and our students. So I think that's a pretty good indicator that right. folks are more ready to have this conversation and are noticing that maybe we need to have this conversation.
My work career was in electronics, computers, systems, all that stuff for years and years. And one of the things I know psychologically that happens with the internet is there's a level of anonymity there. Mm-hmm. And it does not surprise me that people who are probably thinking, I don't feel right, something's not right, something's going on, or I'm having these dark thoughts, maybe I'll zoom into this class and maybe I'll be able to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. And also people who just, now they have the time.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll take advantage of this. I've got, nobody's going out and partying these days. So maybe on a Friday night, I'll, replay a YouTube about QPR or something like that. And I think got to take advantage of those things.
Yeah. And I think too, I know that folks are being asked to do a lot now in the pandemic and things like that. So it might even be just that there's more flexibility with our schedules mm-hmm. and that we can, kind of arrange things and do that. And then I think, we're seeing more about mental health in the news and people are having more conversations about it. So I think folks are thinking, okay, I'm seeing this. How do I get involved and how do I help? And so I think that's really great.
Fabulous. Fabulous, fabulous. Now, I don't know if mental health education, how much do you folks relate with the actually counseling service on campus?
Yeah, we partner with the Counseling and Testing Center a lot. We do a lot of outreach related to mental well-being. Actually, we have an upcoming workshop that we partnered in developing with. So that's the Supporting Students in Distress that's coming up on March 24th. And we've partnered with them to develop that, as well as our Dean of Students Office case manager was a part of that team to develop this workshop. So we partner with them on things like that. We refer students to the Counseling and Testing Center all the time. Mm-hmm. We talk about them as a resource in our presentations. And we actually have, we were awarded a $40,000 suicide prevention grant in fall. And part of that is enabling us to add more instructors to our mental health first aid team. One of those instructors is coming out of the Counseling and Testing Center. So we'll have that. And another one is from the Dean of Students Office as a case manager. So we are able to expand our programming for our faculty, staff, and students and provide those trainings as well. So we work very closely with the Counseling and Testing Center to really work on stigma reduction so that folks know that the Counseling and Testing Center is completely free, completely confidential, that they are now offering Zoom services for folks so that they can Zoom in and access those counseling services while maintaining safety procedures and things like that. So we work with them quite frequently.
And you also mentioned, we were talking before the show a little bit about outreach into the community as well, and in the schools, which that's fabulous.
Yes. So we have done QPR for the Genesee schools for their 8th grader and 10th grade health classes. And so I actually just did that with them this week. And that's always a really great opportunity to start the conversation about mental health and suicide prevention early. And so that's a great relationship. And we've done mental health first aid through Empower Idaho for the community as well. So on occasion, we do get to do those outreach events, and that's always really great to get to share this knowledge. But there's also resources, if we're not able to do that, that you can get trained in mental health first aid. So if you're a faculty, staff, or student, you can go to uidaho.edu/MHFA and register. And if you're a community member, you can go on to mentalhealthfirstaid.org and search for places where they're offering trainings. And there's a variety of different places and price points and things like that on the website. So I encourage you to look for that. And now with there being more virtual offerings, there should be more opportunities to kind of shop around and find some different options.
Wow, that's fabulous. Yeah, and getting it into that 7th, 8th, 9th grade, that just preteen and teen years. Yeah, my I remember those years, and I'm in love, I'm heartbroken, I'm discovering, you know, so much about myself, and, you know, I'm getting tempted into, alcohol and drugs and everything else. And I can't think of a better place to have friends that will be able to recognize and, you know, start a QPR process. Because I know the it's all over the news about, you know, people in that age bracket committing suicide, you know, before they even really have a chance to get things figured out. And that's just painful for me just to know it's happening. It kills me.
Yeah. That is a particularly high risk group for death by suicide. And, knowing that, we can have more conversations about that. And with that age group, we really do emphasize telling a trusted adult about those things. And with all of these trainings, knowing that you aren't alone, both the person who might be experiencing that mental health concern, but also the first aider or the gatekeeper in that situation, that you have support and resources and things like that. And so, really, helping that person to reach out and get that support, knowing that you don't have to take that all on yourself.
Yeah, because, at that age, I was not fully cooked. I didn't have all the answers. I grew up, I grew up in an extremely dysfunctional family. So there were no tools to be gained there. And trustworthy adults? I don't think so. You use the term gatekeeper. And can you define that?
Yeah. And actually, at the bridge is a really good example of that, because really what a gatekeeper is somebody who notices and somebody who connects somebody to that help. So, you know, it might be that it might be really difficult for somebody, especially if somebody's experiencing something like depression, because part of depression can be not wanting to do anything about that depression. So that can be really difficult. So it's really somebody who notices and who says, hey, I can help you get connected. Let's, let's, you know, let bridge that gap.
Let me open the gate for you.
And yeah, so it's not meant to like keep people out. Sometimes when you hear gatekeeper, it has kind of that negative connotation of keeping people out. Right. But that's actually totally the opposite of what's going on here. It's somebody who's connecting somebody to a resource. And so you could be a gatekeeper in any number of situations, but really it's just, it's kind of like an active bystander, somebody who notices and does something to help and steps up and, you know, really just has a conversation.
Wow. Okay. That is fabulous. Why don't we go over a few of these upcoming courses? You mentioned the Supporting Students in Distress. It's coming up in March. But you also have, let's see, at least one session of QPR coming up pretty quick. And that's Tuesday, February 23rd from 12 to 1 p.m. Good lunch hour time.
Yes.
And again, all these are being offered virtually at this time. How do people get that that Zoom invite and information?
Yes. So you do have to register. So if you go on to uidaho.edu/QPR, you can click on sign up. And you just, if you're a community member, you can just mark yourself. There's an other form. So you can join us for QPR. And that would be totally fine. We have virtual room and we can come together in that virtual space. And so you're more than welcome to attend those. And really, you know, hone up on your gatekeeping skills.
Fabulous, fabulous. And then you did mention Supporting Students in Distress, and that's Wednesday, March 24th, 2 to 3 p.m., again on Zoom. And I would imagine that's also pre-registration is requested.
Prepared. Yes. This one is really specific to U of I students and faculty and staff taking that as well. But really what this workshop is going through, okay, how do we know when maybe there is some students in distress, especially with, you know, having more, we have in-person, we have high flex, we have digital classes. So, you know, how maybe can you notice some of those warning signs no matter which way you're instructing your course, or if you're a fellow student in a course or things like that. And then kind of a model for how to walk through and, you know, really focusing on, you know, how things are at the moment and helping folks in this moment. But you can register for that on uidaho.edu/VHE workshops, all one word.
All right. And then mental health first aid. This is looks for this first one is primarily for faculty and staff. Is it two offerings or a 2-day event?
Yes, it's a 2-day event. So mental health first aid in the virtual space looks like 2 hours of pre-work, which is really where a lot of the what are mental health concerns, a little bit about self-care, you know, kind of an introduction into our action plan. So kind of that introductory piece, that's where that happens. And then we do 6 hours of live virtual training with our instructors. So it's two pieces on the 30th and the 1st from 9 a.m. to noon. And so we go through all of our, you know, our potential warning signs and walk through the plan. And we have videos and polls. Everything we do is meant to be very interactive, you know, even in a digital space. So we use all the tools on Zoom we can. We encourage folks to keep their cameras on and to interact with one another. We ask discussion questions. We use the chat. We use polls. We use annotate. So lots of different options for interaction there. But it's all one session there in late March, early April.
Fabulous. And then following, or actually prior to that, it looks like there's also one specifically for students. And I think there may have been two dates there. I may have chopped one off.
This one is just one date. So we're doing this all in one go. Still that 2 hours of pre-work. And if students are interested, they should register ASAP so you can get access to your pre-work and get that done, because that does need to be done ahead of the live virtual session. And so students can go ahead and register for that. And then we go from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. with breaks and lots of times to stretch and things like that so that we can get through the whole day.
Fabulous. Well, that's going to cover a lot of stuff. Gosh, I think we've covered it all. My brain is empty. Well, empty from my perspective, full from the information mm-hmm. coming from you. Because there's a lot there and a lot of things that people can take advantage of, and I think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
So we're just about out of time anyway, so I want to say thank you, Amanda, for coming in today and spending a little time with us on this snowy off and on day. The sun keeps threatening to come out, but it won't. Hopefully people will hear this message and get on the web and sign up for some of these courses. And maybe we can have you back again sometime and talk about other things that are coming up or get a little more detail. Maybe have a micro QPR class on the radio. That would be fun.
I would have to check with my requirements for that.
Right.
But we could maybe arrange something.
That might be fun.
And talk through that.
Yeah, because we could even do, just thinking about it, because we're a weekly program, we could do week. To week, but we'll see how that gels. We have a lot of folks that would like to come on, but because of either the scope of what they're doing or their professions, I mean, some doctors we've invited to come on, and they're like, "Well, my practice won't really," you know. It's we understand that sometimes there's some hoops to jump through to make something like that happen. But it's available online, and that's all great, and look forward to people doing it. And that just about wraps it up for us today. Thanks for listening, and I'll close with my usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with drugs or alcohol, you do.
I've been on the low, I've been taking my time. I feel like I'm out of my mind. It feel like my life ain't mine. Who can relate? Woo! I've been on the low, I've been taking my time. I feel like I'm out of my mind. It feel like my life ain't mine. I don't wanna be alive. I don't wanna be alive. I just wanna die today. I just wanna die. Other shit I'm talking about, they think they know it. I've been praying for somebody to say me, no one's heroic. And my life don't even matter, I know it, I know it. I know I'm hurting deep down, but can't show it. I never had a place to call my own. I never had a home. Ain't nobody calling my phone. Where you been, where you at, what's on your mind? They say every life precious, but nobody care about mine. I've been on the low, I've been taking my time. I feel like I'm out of my mind. It feel like my life ain't mine. Who can relate? Woo! I've been on the low, I've been taking my time. I feel like I'm out of my mind. It feel like my life ain't mine. I want you to be alive. I want you to be alive. You don't gotta die today. You don't gotta die. I want you to be alive. I want you to be alive. You don't gotta die. Now let me tell you why.
It's the very first breath when you're
without a little night. I'm just trying to set a little light. It can be hard. It can be so hard. But you gotta live right now. You got everything to give right now. I've been on the low. I've been taking my time. I feel like I'm out of my mind. It feel like my life ain't mine. Who can relate? Woo! I've been on the low. I've been taking my time. I feel like I'm out of my mind. It feel like my life ain't mine. I finally wanna be alive. I finally wanna be alive. I don't wanna die today. I don't wanna die. I finally wanna be alive. I finally wanna be alive.
tears give out, and I see my tears melt in the snow. But I don't wanna cry, I don't wanna cry anymore.